Hello, hello. Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends with Christine, Marie, and Julie.
It's like sunny, beachy music.
It is, and it's so great because we're talking about, we have one guest tonight, one very special guest tonight for our first half hour, and Robert Atkinson is our guest tonight. He's a PhD, and he's an amazing man, and we're going to be talking about his book, Mystic Journey, Getting to the Heart of Our Soul Story. And before we bring him on, Mom and I have been talking about this. We've been really looking forward to bringing him on and talking about the soul's journey because we have questions of our own.
We sure do.
And sometimes I try to avoid those questions because I find myself in this loop upon a loop upon a loop where it's like, I never get an answer.
You know? Could that be, sound like a paradox, Julie?
Yes. Is that a quandary, or what's that thing called?
It's like a mystery inside of a conundrum inside of a Rubik's Cube. I don't know.
And then I would just love, in my quieter moments when I talk to God, and I would just say, God, please just tell me. Just tell me now.
And then I don't have to navigate any of these these stages of my life.
Wouldn't that be sweet? And I think when we talked to Robert, he would go, you know, Julie, I don't think that's a soul's journey for God just to say, here is the answer right here. Yeah. And it's done in a heartbeat. You know?
I know. Wouldn't you like just to go, you know what? Screw the journey. Let's just get right to the destination.
Sometimes I feel like that, but then I have to remind myself that the journey is, you know, the whole thing is about the journey,
mm-hmm.
to enjoy the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is what it is.
See, I'm sure that the ancient Aztecs never had a little glyph that said, it is what it is. Or maybe they did.
Well, you know, with Freud, he goes, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. So it is what it is, Julie. Sometimes your life is just what it is, your life.
So why don't you tell a little bit about who we are first,
yes.
before we bring on our guests.
Oh, great. Well, you know, we're Christine, Marie, and Julie. We're mother, daughter, certified law of attraction coaches, radio co-hosts. I want to say hello to everybody on BBS Radio as well in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and the authors of the number one best-selling book, The Clutterfly Effect.
Yay!
And you can find out more about us at thecutterflyeffect.com. And on our show, Life with the Girlfriends, we love bringing you amazing authors. And sometimes we just get to chat between Christine and I, and that's what we're going to do tonight in our last half hour. Just kind of chat about the material and also do some girlfriend chatting, because mm-hmm. I've got a list of things I need to share with my mama that I sometimes stay for the radio.
Yeah, you do, and you spring it on me.
And the reason why is that I get mama refined on the radio. And to all the daughters out there, they know exactly what I mean. You know, you can ask your mama a question at a restaurant, you know, filled with family and friends, at a big outgoing or whatever, mm-hmm. and your mama's going to give you a different response than when you're alone.
Or on the radio, too.
Or on the radio.
Lots of people. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So I say right now, in front of all of our lovelies, you know, the second half hour, I might be just asking my mama some questions, mm-hmm. some girlfriend questions, mm-hmm. and hoping that she, you know, gives me mama point two.
Good old mama advice, right?
Yes, good old mama advice without her saying, okay, Julie, just leave me alone. It's crazy. That's crazy. So should we bring in our
I
first...
I can't wait.
I can't either.
I can't wait.
Talking about the souls during the night, just a deep, deep topic between my mom and I and all the lovelies out there, so we can't wait. So we're bringing in Robert Atkinson, and you can find out more about Robert Atkinson at his website, robertatkinson.net. But, okay, he's an internationally recognized authority in helping people tell their life stories. And that we all know that telling our stories is so important. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
He's an author of 8 books, professor of human development and religious studies, and director of Life Story Commons at the University of Southern Maine. I mean, very awesome, awesome man. Are you there, Robert?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, great.
Hi,
thank you.
Evening.
And we know you weren't sure that you were live tonight, so I want you to know that if you have to leave, just let us know that if you have to go someplace to say, oh, you know, ladies, thank you, but I got to get going. We totally appreciate your time tonight, because you wrote the book Mystic Journey, Getting to the Heart of Your Soul Story. Just reading the information in a few of your chapters in your book and just going down deep into your work, I have just been touched so deeply. And so I got a lot of questions for you, Professor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'll get the easy one out of the way, which is so the one that you hear all the time. You know, so what inspired you to take this work on and to write this book?
Yeah, well, it's been great listening to you guys back and forth there first. It's been a lifelong interest and quest on my part, and you know how one thing leads us to the next. And I started out, well, I mean, there's a whole series of chapters in my story, but what led me to this book is a number of things. I mean, I can go way back to my childhood experiences. I think we all have our own moment of truth experiences that mm-hmm. define or change the course of our lives forever. And for me, that came pretty early when I was about 9 years old. My grandmother came to live with us for part of the year. And that was pretty amazing for me as an only child, too, to have her with us. And I observed her in her room every day, reading the Bible and the upper room. And that just, without really knowing much about it or what was going on and why, it just struck me and had it stayed in a deep place. And I was really impressed by her devotion and commitment. And you know, little did I know then, but about 15 years later, I came to realize that the journey of the soul begins, whether we're ready for it or not. It's a journey that at first is not tied to consciousness, but later on becomes directly dependent on the level of conscious awareness we have of our lives and the actions we take. So when I was in my mid-20s, I began having this series of adventures where one thing led to another, and it started off with the moonwalk in 1969 and led to me being a crew member on the maiden voyage of the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater with Pete Seeger and his singing friends, and coming to Woodstock and a whole other series of adventures. But during that whole time, I had my own sort of mystic experience of you know, there's all kinds of literature on that and had different names for it, but that was when I came to realize through my own sort of direct experience that not only that God existed, but that I had some kind of a role in this world. And so that kind of played out, and over the years I after my series of adventures kind of took their course, I went back for, by that time I had my first master's degree. Then after that, I went back for my second master's degree in counseling, and then finally my doctorate in cross-cultural human development. And when I got to the University of Southern Maine, I decided to create what's now the Life Story Commons. And over the years, we built up an archive of life stories. And in doing that, I also wrote a number of books about the life story interview process, methodology. And what I found was kind of missing, the missing piece to all that was not just, I mean, what I had been writing about and helping people tell what life story is about was from pretty much from a birth to death perspective. But I knew and realized it was time to bring in a broader, longer, deeper perspective, the eternal perspective to that. And so I started bringing in the soul's journey to as an aspect or a way to get to the deeper levels of our life story.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is a result of that effort to provide guidelines, guideposts along the way. From the world's sacred traditions and psychology and literature and other sources to show not only that we do have an eternal journey, but that that journey is made up of lots of twists and turns. And I was interested in what you had to say at the very beginning of your own process of wanting to get to the destination or not being that in are interested in the difficult parts. Well, that's it's all really crucial. And one of the things that we learn about the journey of the soul and the process of the lifelong process of soul making is that it really follows what I think of as the blueprint or the pattern of sacred stories everywhere and throughout time. And as we know, all good stories have a beginning, a middle, and an end. But what we don't often think about is that they also have a beginning, a muddle, and a resolution. And so we get, as you indicated, we get a little frustrated or anxious during that muddle part. And what we may forget is that right beyond that muddle, there will be a resolution. And that when that process completes itself, we've experienced in our own way, in our own lives, the archetype of transformation. Mm-hmm. So that's a very important key part to the soul's journey.
Absolutely. How long have you been teaching?
Hey, Robert, how long have you been teaching? How long have you been teaching at the university?
I'm having a little hard time hearing you.
Oh, you're having a little hard time hearing us? Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, Christine was just wondering, how long have you been teaching this material, been teaching?
Well, I've been at the University of Southern Maine for about 25 years now. What's in the book that I was just talking about has been a small piece to what I bring into my human development courses. I do think that it's really important to bring in the spiritual development perspective of human development. So it's a piece of it.
Now, in your
and it always has been. I mean, because it always has been for me in my own life. So I wanted to make it that way in my courses too.
It's hard. It's hard to not put yourself into your coursework. That's for sure. You want to make sure you do that.
Julie.
Yeah.
What I wanted to ask Robert was, and maybe you can, if he's not able to hear me, but what has there been much change in, you know, people, student stories over the decades that he's been teaching? You know, has he noticed some differences, or are they all still universal?
I don't know if I heard
Christine. That's a really interesting thing to think of, to think about the differences and the universals in our stories. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are both. And it's probably easiest for someone to tell their life story on what might be thought of as a surface level. And then when that happens, we tend not to get to the deeper or universal aspects of our life. So whenever we can get to the parts of our lives that include the muddles and the resolutions, we are getting to that deeper level. So that's the important way, I think, in trying to tell a life story. And of course, everybody has those in their lives. It's just the difference. One of the differences comes about in regard to how comfortable or how familiar people are with their own challenges and difficulties, and how willing they are to include those or talk about those with others. But that's where the real transformation lies, is in acknowledging, talking about, integrating those challenges into the story that we tell every day to whoever we come in contact with.
That's true. You know, how comfortable we are with our suffering, and when we familiarize ourselves with the sacred stories or the, you know, that through, you know, through the cultures, then we can begin to sort of relax and deepen into the soul's journey and what that suffering, you know, represents and where it can transcend.
Right. Yeah, it's partly a matter of comfort, becoming comfortable with everything that does happen to us. It's also an important part of what leads to that comfort level with anything that does happen to us is being open to everything that does happen to us, because everything is a part of who we are and what we're meant to experience. So the openness is really key too, and that means, you know, not shutting ourselves off to things that might be unfamiliar or unknown, and being ready and being aware of how things can and do change in our lives, and another big piece of it is being.
So where are you at in the like the use of organic drugs to sort of open the consciousness? Did, you know, you talked about Woodstock. You talked about in the 60s. So have you where are you in your beliefs in the use of that stuff in terms of transcendence and opening up consciousness?
In terms of what's going on around us?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, what's the, you know, what's the one, oh, gosh, was it Kayayuska? I'm not even sure what that drug is, or that a lot of the natives used to take to go on a spiritual journey, and a lot of times, they said that, you know, you can't even, you know, you're so changed when after you've experienced this. And I'm not even sure if I'm even saying it right. Jewel, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. I don't know the herb that you're talking about. And Mama, I'm just going to say right now, Robert, I'm sure I think you're going to pull that question out.
So we're talking about expanding consciousness.
Hey, what do you think about using the organic material here for expanding our consciousness? So I was like, I don't know. I'm still a college professor. So anyway.
Well, I think that's part. It's a great question, and maybe one of the answers to that is if it's an accepted, normal, natural part of our culture, then we should be open to that too. And of course, if you are familiar with Native American rites of passage and vision quests and those kinds of things, that's where it was a natural part of that process.
Right.
So in that culture, it may have been part of it. In ours, I mean, it's might be a little different, you know. But that's all. It's a personal matter, and you know, when it's not a central, purposeful part of the culture itself, then it becomes a personal matter or choice.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about, Robert, in your book, soul making, and I'd like you to define that a little bit about what you mean by soul making.
Yeah, well, I like the way Marion Woodman put it. Soul making is recognizing that we are a physical being with a spiritual being journeying with us, and when those two when we become aware of both at the same time, and when one comes into conflict with the other, then that becomes the important part of soul making is through the clash of opposites. Is the way that transformation comes about, really. And so soul making is all about dealing with those difficulties and challenges of our life. And
Robert, my mom used to say, she had a phrase, I guess when I was growing up, in my teenage years and in my early 20s, she used to say, you know, don't suffer over the suffering, or you're suffering over the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you become aware that, I mean, I can say right now that it has been my potential to suffer more than need be over these obstacles or the duality or the opposites that occur in our life. is it, do you think that once we know that suffering, or once we are more aware that, hey, suffering is this part of transformation, because our once we have the suffering occurs, resolution then is on the other side of that, does suffering kind of ease up then, and is that a good thing?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the biggest points about that, and to keep that in mind really helps, I think. Because the more times we go through this, the more times that we experience the archetype of transformation and become familiar with the pattern itself, the easier the sufferings become, the more we've already experienced of that. And of course, the particular form of suffering will change and vary from time to time in our lives, but the pattern remains the same. And, I mean, another version of the same pattern is birth, death, rebirth, or as Joseph Campbell talks about it, separation, initiation, and return. So there's many variations on the same pattern, and also many forms of suffering. But the more we do experience that, the more familiar with it, with the pattern we become, and that makes doesn't necessarily make the suffering easier. It just makes the pattern more familiar to us, and that does ease the suffering as well.
Is there a goal of the soul? In other words,
like an end game in some sense. Like,
yeah,
what's
I
the
mean,
destination?
If you had to say where is my soul headed? I mean, is it transcendency, transformation? Is it ascendancy? Is it evolution? Or is it just a deepening?
Yeah, great. No, it's. I think it's all those things that you just mentioned, and of course, it really depends on. Anyone's answer to that really depends on a personal belief system, but. That's one of the ways that I do approach the mystic journey, the soul's journey in the book, is first of all looking at our life, our existence, as an eternal journey. And so what we experience in this life, all the great things, all the triumphs, as well as all of the difficulties and crises that we experience here, they all help us prepare for whatever we think of as whatever's next. And, of course, so whatever we experience here kind of sets the tone for, and the way we respond to and react to and learn from everything that happens to us here sets the tone for the remaining journey throughout eternity. Of course, again, depending on individual beliefs, the goal of the eternal journey could be, and a lot of traditions do believe that the goal of the eternal journey is reunion with the Creator that we came from originally. So one of the ways of looking at our life on Earth is as a journey from the Creator and a journey returning to the Creator. But there's a lot that goes on in between those two ends of it, the beginning and the resolution part. And so I don't know if you noticed, but on the cover of the book, Mystic Journey book cover, it's meant to be a spiral. And it's actually a photograph of a piece of rock art on a wall in Utah, and I think it's one of a kind because it's not only a spiral, as you can see in the book cover, it also has horizontal lines coming out on both sides from the center. So there's a horizontal line coming in from the left leading to the center, and a horizontal line going out the other way. And there's lots of ways. I mean, there's no one way of interpreting that, but the spiral is a symbol for many things, including transformation and a lot of spiritual growth and a lot of other things. But with that particular piece of rock art, with the horizontal line connecting to the center spiral, could be interpreted as just what I was describing, the journey from the creator, life on this planet, which includes a lot of the, which includes the transformations that we go through, and then the return journey. So that, you know, that could be a goal, if you happen to.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's like the Nautilus,
sacred traditions that
believe
that.
You talk about patterns, you know, and
yeah.
I mean, that really truly is the, you know, the one pattern, like the spiral, the Nautilus, that kind of stuff.
I have
a question now. If you think, I hope this is not a dumb question, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because how often do I have Professor Robert Atkinson here? But would you say that, this has always been a question of mine, would you say that the soul, Bob, is different than the spirit?
Yeah, that's a really big, tough one. I mean, in a lot of ways, they're very similar, and in other ways, again, depending on the particular tradition that you might be coming at that from,
they could be
different. And spirit too is used in different ways. One way it's used is with a small s. Other ways it's used with a capital S. So it depends on how you're using spirit. But one of the similarities they do have is that they're both eternal, and that's the unique part about either the soul or the spirit, is that it's the only part of us that we carry with us through eternity. And so that has to me, it doesn't really make too much difference whether you refer to that eternal part of us as the soul or as the spirit, because they're very close and similar. But one thing that happens when you do think of the soul and or the spirit that way is that it really can change the way we see ourselves and the way we define our own identity. That's another big piece of it. If we think of ourselves as just living on this earth from birth to death, our identity, and actually our many identities, we all have multiple identities that we carry with us, but when we have that temporal perspective of life, our identity is limited to those temporal aspects of who we are. But when we bring in the eternal perspective that includes the soul and the spirit, then our identity becomes an eternal part of us. And it's the only part of us that we take with us and keep with us. And that raises some really interesting questions, really some important questions about how do we identify or what do we think of as our personal identity? Do we think of it as one of those temporal identities that may change during our lifetime, or that may only last until the end of this lifetime? Or do we think of ourselves as a soul or a spirit that will remain who we are throughout eternity?
I mean, that's so interesting, because, I mean, years ago I used to sort of use those words interchangeably, but as I get older, for me the soul has a more of a bittersweet quality. Like you said, it always longs for home. And it always exists in this polarity or duality. And then for me, spirit has more, I'm just trying to describe it to Julie today, like it's like fire. It has it's sort of laser, and it has a lot of passion and focus. So for me, that's how I define them. And it's interesting, because I may make too much of this word, but when I think of something eternal, I think of the divine as infinite, you know, no beginning, no end. But I see eternal as having no end, but possibly a beginning. In other words, so I see myself as eternal, but part of that spark that came from the infinite, you know, that had no beginning.
Yeah. Right.
But again,
yeah,
you said
that's
it's
exactly
very
how I would think of it too. I mean, we are.
Yeah.
Keats, the poet Keats, thought of us as thought of the soul as that spark of God, and so yeah. I mean, and I do like the way you differentiated between the two. The soul, I do think, has a beginning, but not an end. And that's
right.
a helpful way to look at our existence, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And I think the soul brings this, at least for me, and maybe in other cultures, but for me the soul has this quality of gravitas. I mean, there's this, you know, it is a story, and it's one that I want to consciously work at evolving. I want to keep telling a better story, not just like better ooh-hoo, you know, but I mean like a more interesting storyteller story that has, you know, deep complexities and, you know, all these kind of things that I think that's my soul's journey, although I would have liked to have just said, oh, you know, hey, God, make me a millionaire and give me a, you know, silver spoon in my mouth, you know. But instead I'm having my journey is to have a very deep, reflective, you know, sort of, you know, this soul weaving life.
Yeah. Right, and that's the kind of thing that will help you on the next leg of your eternal journey. that deep reflection here will help later on. You know, get us.
Have you ever come across in any other cultures that where they have, you know, brought back information from the beyond, and so, you know, gives us glimpses into that?
Well, that's another really interesting question, and it's probably a universal, and I don't think it's limited to any particular cultures. I think it's a Western thing as well as Eastern, and it connects, I think, very much to all the reports and the books that we've had over the last few decades on near-death experience, and people who have that have come back from that with their visions and their wisdom from that. So yeah, I think it exists in many cultures, and I mean, if it existed for one people or one culture, why wouldn't it exist for all? I mean, it has to be one of those universals where if anyone can have that access to the beyond, then all of us have that potential as well.
Absolutely. Robert, this is Julie here, and I don't know if you have to go or not. Can you stay on for just a few more minutes longer? Is it okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great.
It's great. Talking with you guys.
Oh, good. Okay, good. In your book, you talk about the importance of remembering, and that's part of our journey as well. And also, you touch real, and I didn't go deep into this idea, but remembering the importance and then letting go of the unimportant, in some sense, of our stories. What do you mean by the unimportance, or what do you mean by that in some sense?
Yeah, well, one way to think about the difference between those two is the... the important would be what not only two things. The important would be that whatever lasts forever for us, whatever matters the most to us, and what. So it's a matter of how we distinguish between those two is a matter of what kind of stays with us. And of course, what doesn't is all of the kind of temporal things that seem important in the moment, but then an hour later they're forgotten. You know, those are the distinctions that I guess I would make. And of course, the things that end up being important last because they are part of, well, they're really part of what Jung would call the collective unconscious, or they're an archetypal kind of experience that all human beings have. And so whenever we have an experience that is common to other human beings, those are definitely important. And it's about recognizing those moments when we step out of the temporal realm and into the eternal. And of course, that's what Jung spent 90% of his autobiography writing about, was those times in his life when the eternal merged with the temporal, or you know, that kind of thing. So we have to be on the lookout for those and be able to know the difference. I think that comes, knowing the difference comes with experience and reflection on our regular daily activities and experiences. But we can become familiar with those, and as we go on, as we become more familiar, we can more easily distinguish between the unimportant and the important in that way.
For sure. So, Bob, tell me, this is a little personal question, but how's your soul doing? Thinking about going back to the moonwalk and where you were as a young boy, you know, watching your grandmother, and how, you know, you talked about the upper room and her devotions, and you're probably in your 60s now, maybe, and
yes,
so
I am.
So tell me a little bit about your own personal soul journey.
Well, that's great. Thanks for asking.
That should be a song, right?
I thought that was a song.
Well, it's great. Thanks for asking.
I guess it's a South Park song. Hey, I'm great. Thanks for asking.
How about you?
We just are a movement right now. That should be a movement. We should just all say, hey, how's your soul journey doing?
Hey, it's great.
Thanks for asking.
Thanks for asking.
Yours. Well, I'm glad your soul journey is great, Robert. I appreciate that. So, what would you like to tell our lovelies out there right now? One thing for when you were talking about the important stories and the not so important stories, what came to mind was this idea, this thought to me is that sometimes, you know, what will happen. You know, we know these archetypes are out there, and that we all have their universal archetypes, and we all experience them. But in so many ways, we don't want to let anybody else know that we're experiencing them. We're almost ashamed that we've had to experience these archetypes. Even like transformation. Oh yes, transformation occurred. Oh, but I had to have transformation. I'm not perfect or whatever. I had suffering, and you know, what came to me was this idea: like, wow. When we all get it that everything is universal, and I was thinking in my head this, I don't know if it's an archetype or not, but this fear of public humiliation, and yet I would imagine that most of us, I would say all of us maybe, have had some sort of form where we kind of were embarrassed out in the world, you know, in front of friends or whatever, and in some bigger ways, and yet it's a very powerful fear. And if once we acknowledge that, oh, that's just, we all go through that. That all happens to every one of us. It kind of subsides, that fear. And I don't know if I'm explaining it right, but that was just came to me when you were talking about the archetypes and so forth.
I think that probably is maybe an archetype.
Thanks, Mom. Because I'm like, I didn't study this as much.
I was validated for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for validating me.
So, yeah, Robert, what would you like to?
It's a great example. I think that's one of the most important things that the archetype of transformation is for helping us turn really inside out those feelings or emotions or you mentioned the feeling of embarrassment or whatever it might be, ashamed. Those happen to us too for a reason, and the reason is, and the archetype is for helping us transform those into maybe their opposite, or at least something else that doesn't feel as uncomfortable to us. So whenever you, the more familiar you become with these kinds of archetypal experiences and the pattern of transformation, the easier it becomes to remember that experiences of being ashamed or being embarrassed, whatever else it might be, are times kind of given to us as a gift to transform that into, the next thing. It's opposite.
Right.
So it's all purposeful and helpful to our journey.
You know what I'm thinking about right now? You may have this story handy. Remember Jung and the scarab or the beetle? Do you recall that?
Not sure.
Yeah, I just all of a sudden I remembered that Jung was. I remember it was like the story. He was sitting at his desk and he was, I don't know if he was meditating about something, but then this like scarab or a beetle landed on his window, and it somehow he transformed that beetle, and I can't remember now, but I thought maybe you might have had that story at the
Sounds vaguely familiar now too.
It does. Yeah, and it's remember
that's
now,
what
but
it's about.
Yeah. Well, do you have any words of wisdom to leave with our lovelies out there? And other than, of course, Julie, the first thing I want to do when I'm so sorry that I didn't buy your book before tonight, but I am so just really interested in getting my hands on it because it just sounds so, like it is something for our time. We need this right now to make sense of things. To make deeper sense of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your comments on the book. I appreciate that. I guess the one thing I would mention is kind of just going right along with what you just said, that the time that we're living in right now really does call... we're in a time of crisis, and so what it really calls for is a transformation, and the transformation that we need most of all right now is both personal and collective transformation of consciousness. That would go so far, and if we individually and collectively could accomplish that transformation of consciousness, that would go so far in solving so many of the world's problems that we're experiencing every day now too. So probably the most important thing in anybody's life right now is to be thinking about how their own personal transformation of consciousness can come about, and then how that can contribute to our collective transformation of consciousness.
And do you feel like that the collective, transformation is handled like by the 100th monkey syndrome, or do you just believe that hey, we go out and live our service?
I think it happens both ways. We all have to do what we can and what becomes most important to us individually, but then the more of us that do that, maybe I'm the 25th monkey or whatever it is, somewhere along the line, we are going to reach that 100th monkey point, and then... things might not necessarily be any easier at that point, but it'll be a lot more commonly known what the task or challenge at hand is once we do reach that 100th monkey. So, yeah, it's both at the same time. The individual transformation helps to bring about the collective transformation.
And I love in your book, Robert, when you talk about how we are hardwired for transcendence and transformation in some sense. You know, and I like that idea that, hey, we can do this. You know, we can have transformation in our life. We can have transcendence in our life. And I just love that you talked about how your cells transcend and your cells make up more cells and then you're a human and all that. I mean, just it was a great part of the book. Mm-hmm. And I want to say you can get your book.
I want to urge everybody to. Can you just get it at Amazon.com, Jill?
Yeah.
I don't know. Amazon.com, great. And then it's The Mystic Journey, Getting to the Heart of Your Soul Story by Robert Atkinson. You can go to his website, too, robertatkinson.net, and he's got an excerpt from his book there, blog. He also has images for the journey. He's also a photographer.
Yes. And that cover, you took the picture of that of your cover, didn't you?
Yes, of the spiral.
Yes.
It's great. And it's great because yet you don't have any pictures of Northern Illinois. I mean, Robert, we're from Northern Illinois, and I want to say it's beautiful there, and you need to have a well-rounded portfolio.
Yep.
I say take pictures of Northern Illinois.
You need to come out
well,
by
well, I did spend 2 years in Chicago,
I
would look forward to coming back.
Good. Thank you, Robert, very much for being on Live with the Girlfriends tonight. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you. It was great. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Have a great, great night.
Bye, Robert. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Mm-hmm. I loved it. What a great interview. Perfect. You know, it's so great.
Okay, I want to say deep.
Very deep.
Deep interview.
You know, Mama, you surprised me. So, Robert, what do you think about getting into the organics?
I know. I wanted to talk about that.
Well, I thought
I'm sure he would say, depending on what culture, I think he did say that, depending on what culture you're it's okay.
But I thought that was a brilliant answer, too, because sometimes where we grow up culturally, I mean, that's where our soul's journey begins, mm-hmm. in some sense, in this lifetime, on this planet.
Well, like he talked about the vision quest. I mean, that was, you know, in the Native American cultures, I mean, it was like a rite of passage to go on this by yourself, take this. I think it's called Cayahuasca or something.
Or Cayahuasca, something like that.
Yeah.
Or I don't know.
And then, you know, you would have this, you know, major experience that would pretty much break open your consciousness, you know.
And I was hearing somebody talk about their experience with that. And he was British, and he was and I don't do any drugs, so I'm just being honest with people out there.
Derek, hold on, people at home listening, this is a disclaimer. Julie doesn't do any drugs. Whatever she's talking about, she's heard
in front of my mom. Secondhand knowledge.
Oy vey, girlfriend.
But this idea that, you know, you need to have a support team around you when you're taking this.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes, you do.
And that there is, like...
And when you take the drug, support teams come to you.
Your non-physical support team comes
to
you. Exactly. And sometimes it shows you, like, you know... I think it was like this guy said that a lot of times a woman god or a female presence comes in,
mm-hmm.
and kind of shows you where you're kind of going wrong,
mm.
and, you know, with a very stern hand,
mm.
and so forth, and it could come in very, very many forms, and I'm like, you know, awesome. Awesome. So I think you're right. I think where you're pulled to is probably where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, you know what, then you support team and do it right and all that stuff. But anyway, I just love this interview with Robert.
In terms of your soul's journey, I think that what most people would say is, you know, their greatest suffering moments, not your brightest moments that leads you to your soul. Like, you know, oh, look at me, I was this and that. It's like, I can remember when my brother was, you know, killed in a car accident, and I was young, and I mean it really I can look at my life before and after that, you know, and and how my soul deepened and grew because of that. It actually it led to me going back to school, getting my bachelor's and my master's and, you know, certification, because I was not only trying to make sense for me and heal me, but then I saw the need to help others, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
And I think that's how it probably goes.
I think you're right. And I think that, and then, you know, through the course of your life, you can say, well, there have been several times where struggle has occurred and resolution was needed and so forth,
mm-hmm.
that where your soul grew, if you want to say it like that, or developed deeper essences of, mm-hmm. of that.
I mean, I think, we grew up with this word, oh, that person's an old soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you kind of know what that means because you see something in them, you recognize something that's deeper,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe there's a deeper kind of a twinkling in the eye or some sort of a resonance or harmoniousness that you feel with that person. You go, oh, they understand, or sometimes those people, like, you want to just tell your life story to, you know,
yeah,
you're like,
exactly.
Oh, they'll understand me.
Yeah.
But we recognize in our society those kind of people with that kind of quality, that, like, old soul. And then you see, like, new souls, you know, like, oh, man, oh, no, they haven't been around very long.
They're all over the place, you know. And, you know, in his book, too, he talks about this idea of, you know, practical soul making, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and how telling the stories of your soul. And, you know, we talk about telling stories, too, and sometimes we talk about tweaking the stories
mm-hmm.
so that, because a story can be told in so many different directions and perspectives,
mm-hmm.
and how to best tell a story for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in some ways that's part of the soul's journey, too, to see the story.
Mm-hmm. I think he talks about, if you were going to tell your story, tell it in terms of the pattern.
Oh.
He talks about this pattern, and usually it ends in, you know, going from muddle to resolution.
Yes.
I mean, we like to say, go ahead and tell your story as you see it, from a place now of more empowerment. How did you, you know, how did this story lead you to a bigger perspective, like what he's talking about? How did it, you know, how did it open your consciousness more, you know, and lead you to more service, or, you know, to the collective consciousness where we would like to head? So, you know, our life stories are so important, especially now when we can tie them to our soul's journey.
Mm.
You know, every Disney story starts out with, you know, la, 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 I'm so happy. And then, oh, my God, mother is killed in a forest fire.
Yeah.
And I am now an orphan.
Yes.
And now I must, I have 5 challenges, and the evil ogre is coming
one
after.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, those are the heroic stories, you know, that we all have to go through.
Hmm. Well, very interesting. This conversation of soul making, or
mm-hmm.
the soul's journey. I mean, it's like the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
But just thinking about in terms of the soul this week has made my life feel a little lighter. And last week, too, we had 2 authors on talking about the soul's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the idea of, like, we talked about, oh, what do you think about Maslow's hierarchy? And she says, no,
yes.
Switch it around.
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
you
yes.
know?
Screw it.
Screw it.
Screw Maslow's hierarchy.
Yes,
what?
Screw Maslow's hierarchy.
Awesome.
Yay.
Yeah. And wasn't that liberating?
It was so liberating.
I know.
Because so many times we thought, how can I work on this stuff?
Yeah, I am so bad because I have not negotiated Maslow's hierarchy yet.
Well, you're getting there. You know, and then we go, really, Christine Marie? Yes, you have. But as a deep thinker.
Ha, 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 the joke's on you.
Yeah. Exactly. Mama, I love you, and I love your soul's journey, and that's my new phrase now. So I'm going to be saying to everybody, hey,
how's your soul?
How's your soul doing today?
Oh, it's doing fine. Thank you very much. How's yours?
How's yours?
Wouldn't that be great, rather than just saying, how's
it? I'm happy. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's
my soul's going good today.
And I'm going to do it with the theme.
Oh, geez. Good Girlfriend songs playing in the background.
Whoa.
But anyway, you guys can go to our website, www.theclutterflyeffect.com. We got a lot of good things coming up this month.
You can buy our book on Amazon.com, The Clutterfly Effect. Pretty soon we'll have the membership site up and running.
Yep. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.